get you started with a couple of headlines that are important out there. The first one, of course, regarding the NBA. We've been talking about it all morning. There is a proposal at this point. The NBA's approved a plan for a 22-team return with 8 regular season games to be played. The Board of Governors intends to approve the league proposal on that format. The conference call and vote is set for 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Commissioner Adam Silver and the league's advisory finance committee have shared the broad details of the plan with teams to play at the Walt Disney World Resort. Sources said the plan includes 13 Western Conference teams, 9 Eastern Conference teams, 8 regular season games, a possible play-in tournament for the A-seed and playoffs. Sources said the top 16 teams in the East and West will be joined by teams currently within 6 games of 8th place in the two conferences. That would mean New Orleans, Portland, San Antonio, Sacramento, Phoenix, and Washington will be added. So a lot of details there that will be worked out. But as of now, we have an actual executable plan for the NBA on how they intend to return. Next up on the headlines that you need to know, a sad one for the college football community. Legendary Pittsburgh and Tennessee star coach John Majors, also a star on the field, died at the age of 85. Majors coached Pittsburgh to a football national championship in 1976, starred as a star player at Tennessee in the 50s, later returned to his alma mater as coach to lead the Volunteers back to national prominence. He died Wednesday morning. He died at the age of 85. Our condolences go out to his family, obviously, through this time. And lastly, on the headlines you need to know, some positive news coming out from Dak Prescott. Cowboys quarterback Prescott has pledged $100 million to, quote, improve police training and address systematic racism through education and advocacy in our country. Prescott's Instagram post represents his first comments on social media regarding George Floyd, who died while in police custody in Minneapolis, last week. His post lays out beautifully, but he's given $1 million at this point. Quote, as our communities take action, protesting and fighting for the justice of George and every black life, I am with you. Really an incredible moment for him to come out and donate so much to try and find a way to get better and a step closer to a solution. So First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. All guests appear with us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. We've had a bunch of them, and we're going to get some straight talk now from one of my favorites. Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, comes from ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj, thanks for the time. I know it's going to be a good morning when I wake up and I see a Woj bomb. You helped break the news this morning of what we have now in the NBA's return to action in the plan. It's 22 teams. How did they come to 22?
Hey, Fitz. You know, they wanted to try to include as many teams as they could in Orlando in a resumption. That, number one, allowed them to put together, you know, a compelling event and give teams who, you know, based on where they were when the season stopped, you know, had a reasonable chance, a reasonable expectation to believe that they could still compete for the playoffs. And you see a cutoff at 6 games back in both the Eastern and Western conferences. And with that cutoff of 6 games, that gets you to 22 teams. You know, there were other teams who wanted to participate beyond the 22, who were willing to go to Orlando even without a pathway to the playoffs, who just wanted the training camp for their young players, wanted to be able to go play the games. Teams like Atlanta, Detroit. That's not happening. And so, financially, certainly more lucrative for the league to have 22. And as part of the 22 team format, I'm told each team will play 8 regular season games, and then there's the potential for a play-in with the 8th and 9th teams, essentially a mini play-in tournament, if a team is within 4 games of the 8th seed after those 8 additional regular season games. And you know, for the NBA, it's, you know, a chance now to, you know, resume their season in late July. July 31st is the tip-off, and then October 12th, I'm told, is the last possible day that a Game 7 of an NBA Finals could be played.
We're talking to ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski. So, Woj, a sports talk conversation at this point is obviously how crowded the October landscape could be in separating in profile and making sure people are paying attention to the NBA. How concerned was the league when they put this plan together about being so crowded in the fall with so many sporting events and making sure that they can get the attention they want?
They've got to play games. I mean, they've got to finish the season. And, it is more financially lucrative for them, if you want to put it in financial terms. I mean, listen, if you lose a few viewers to an NFL game on Monday night, you lose a few viewers, but they got to play. And so this is not ideal, and there were no perfect circumstances. If they had gone with just the 16 teams and played through that, not added the six additional teams, I'm told they could have been done in late September. They wanted to add more teams, have more participation. With every regular season game you play, that's more revenue from local television packages. Remember, there's not going to be any fans. There's no gate receipts. But, you know, listen, ultimately, this is the best of a lot of, in the beginning, it's going to be the best of a lot of bad ideas. And that's what ultimately this is for the league. And they will bump up against the NFL. But what this schedule does do for them, Fitz, it sets them up to start next season in late December and then essentially go up against baseball next summer and not go up against the NFL as they have. So while they do go up against the NFL this October, they're setting up for a calendar that will allow them to not really have to do that, at least for the foreseeable future, for next season and probably the season after, and see if that's a calendar that the league wants to stay on.
Woj, that's a really interesting point, because that excited me, looking at it and saying, hey, give me meaningful, you know, NBA regular season games throughout the course of the entire summer. I'm all in for that. Do you think there's some level of this that is being tested for long-term capability to keep this calendar?
Absolutely. And there were some in the league who had interest in this idea. I think interest in it has become greater curiosity among those in the league about altering the calendar in that way, to see what it does to television ratings, to see what it does at the gate and with interest in teams. And you know, you're looking at a time frame this season of potential game 7 of the NBA Finals on October 12th, and then the NBA draft shortly after that, then NBA free agency starting, all of which you could have started in October. Now, you're not going to finish NBA free agency. If you started on October 30th to 31st, it extends a while. And then the other thing, too, that pushing the start of next season back does for the league, it potentially allows them to have more dates available in arenas with the possibility of having more fans available based on where we are with the coronavirus and whether it's arenas that might have social distancing, arenas that might allow fans back in greater numbers. That was certainly a consideration for the league with pushing back the start of next season. And they can see how the NFL and college football handle fans in arenas before the NBA has to really look at putting people back in buildings.
We're talking ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski on First Take Your Take ESPN Radio. I let smarter people than me do math. So I found a study done by Samford about home court advantage specifically in the NBA playoffs. It looked at the last 10 years. Finds that the home court, the home team wins about 74% of the time. So how concerned are they about trying to find a way to give a home court advantage in empty arenas?
I don't think they're concerned about it at all. I think, listen, remember, teams to vote in, you know, significant rule changes to competitive balance and finance and anything you would do, you know, you need in a lot of cases, two-thirds majority, in some cases, three-quarters majority of the owners. Can you imagine a scenario where teams who are coming back this year vote to make it easier for the Lakers, Bucks, Clippers, Raptors to have a competitive advantage over them at a neutral court? Teams are generally going to vote in their interests, but they're really going to vote in their interests in that way. So, this is, again, for teams, it's not going to feel fair, and there are going to be advantages negated at a neutral court. But this is part of an imperfect resumption of a season that's going to create potentially a champion unlike in an environment unlike we've ever seen in the NBA. And listen, they've got to be hopeful that they can get through this, get into this, with minimal intrusion in a bubble of the coronavirus, of people testing positive, of players or coaches or staff not only testing positive, but of somebody getting sick or worse. And it ultimately, you know, that still for all the competitive things that we're going to talk about and should talk about, you know, that is going to dictate ultimately, I think, whether this is seen as a successful or unsuccessful endeavor, not so much the quality of play or the performances we see. Can the league find a way to get through this in a safe manner that does not put anybody in unnecessary or increased peril?
As you always do, Woj, you've killed it. Great work on this. Great work as always. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Hope you and yours are safe. Thanks for the time, my friend.
You too, Fitz. Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Woj making some great points there. First Take, Your Take with the Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. And we're going to stay on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. When I got the chance to go back-to-back with two of the best in the NBA here on this show, we are going to do it all day, every day. So we go from Woj to ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst, who joins us now. Wendy, thanks for the time. Hope you and yours are safe. And look, we're all trying to react to this and piece it together. Woj just said that it may not be pretty, but the most important thing is safety. I get that. We all agree with that. So let's put the safety to the side. Is the basketball itself, when we get it back, going to look good at all?
Nobody knows. I mean, no one's had this schedule ever before. I mean, you know, they are allowing for a lot of lead time. I mean, we're right here on June 3rd, and, you know, we're probably 8 weeks from playing another game. So I think the key is going to be, and this was a focus from the start from the medical people, that you really needed to give the players time to get into condition. And so they're going to have, you know, a long period of time to try to do that, much longer than your average training camp, for sure, leading up to it. So, but I'm going to say that the games are going to look a lot different. They're going to feel a lot different. There's going to be a lot of trial and error. The concept of playing a vitally important moment in a playoff game in an empty gym is something that nobody is familiar with. So, like, I can't promise it's going to be the best basketball, but I do think that there's a lot of incentive and a lot of desire to make it as good as possible.
So when you start looking at what you just mentioned, how much does the NBA need to worry about the broadcast consideration here and just watching? You know, we've seen other sports return, and at times the silence can almost be haunting. When they're looking at returning, how do they figure out a solution to that, or how focused are they on it?
There's so many different things to consider here. The most basic of which is that how many cameras do you put in? You know, in an NBA Finals game, we are used to having 60 cameras. You know, in your average game, you know, a little less than half of that. But and we're used to certain angles. We're not used to angles in gyms that are not built for NBA basketball. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, just put robotic cameras in. Well, guess what? Those robotic cameras have to be manned by people and maintained by people when they're not working as robots. And yes, more people into the bubble. So my advice would be to you know, in an NBA basketball game, music is played during the game, whether it's music like defense or pump up the fans or whatever, or, you know, popular music. I think that they should still do that. I think that there still needs to be a PA announcer so you hear that. I think ideally you would still have handheld cameras on the court as long as there's distancing so you could get the players coming off the court into timeout huddles. I think that sound is going to be important. I'm not opposed to having crowd noise. I know that sounds weird, but this whole thing is weird. This entire thing, we all have to come together and understand this is all going to be strange. We're all going to make mistakes. This is not necessarily ideal, but it's going to be the best that we have.
I'll steal the idea from Mark Spears that he said the day all of this happened, that it'd be great if the NBA could just put DJs that represent the local cities that have the home court into the arenas to pump their musics and their playlists.
And can I just say something real quick?
Yes.
I see all these ideas about stuff like that. The entire point here is to keep as few people in the bubble as possible. So, like, that's a great idea. Any idea that starts with adding a person to this bubble, cut right from the start. Cut it out. Just so you know, as we go into this whole process in this 2 months leading up to it.
That's a smart point, Wendy. I mean, you're absolutely right. And safety is number one. I think we all look at these things and then we forget about what it takes, not just from the added bodies on scene, but behind the scenes too. It adds more people. You're right. ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst joining us now. We've seen other sports, other leagues make a return to action and players have seemed hesitant. Have you had any sense yet on where NBA players are on their level of comfort getting back involved?
Yeah, there's players who are concerned. And I think that's why, well, it's so interesting, this 22-game plan. And to me, what's the schedule going to be? Because if you're playing eight games, you've got 13 teams in the West, guess what? Everybody's not playing the same schedule. Some teams are getting the raw end of that. Well, there's so much concern and interest in the format. To me, if I'm an NBA player, my number one thing is, what's the protocol? How many times am I going to have that swab stuck up my nose and scrape to know whether I am sick or not? Where can I go with my family? When can I bring my family in? How can I play basketball? Where do I get tape? What happens if I sprain my ankle and need an MRI? When do I have to go to Orlando? Do I have to quarantine when I get there? If I'm in Europe, do I have to quarantine when I get back and then quarantine before I get into Orlando? The players are going to want to know those protocol answers. And to be honest with you, that is what the hard, important stuff is. I understand it's not fun to talk about, but we won't spend a lot of time on it. But if you're asking what the players are thinking about, it's the latter.
And I love the insight. Wendy, as always, I know it's a slam day with all this stuff going on. We really appreciate you giving us some time and some expertise on it. Thanks so much. Hope you and yours are safe.
Take care, guys.
So, you know, what Wendy just said, and look, there are certain moments that we have to peel everything away and say, okay, there's a human element to this. Just because we have a plan doesn't mean that the players are comfortable with it. Now, the assumption has been, and we've talked to a few people over the course of our time here, over the course of the last few weeks, have said that the league and the players have been really coming up with this plan together. So I've got to feel like there's at least better momentum towards knowing the answers to that than there might be if that same approach hadn't been taken. But let's be real here. I don't care how much money you're worth. I don't care what you do. You have the right to feel safe. When we can make the conversation about safety and about the things that need to be done to accomplish that safety, then we're talking about the right things. What we don't want to be talking about in these situations, cough, Major League Baseball, is money. Now, if you go all the way back to what we first heard from Woj, when you talk about this plan, and for anyone just tuning in, Major League Baseball has given us their plan for return, and at this point tomorrow, the Board of Governors will vote on it, but it's a plan for a 22-team return with eight regular season games before we get to a playoff. When you talk about that playoff, it could take the NBA Finals all the way to October 12th. Now we're talking about a shift in the league calendar, and I heard Jalen Rose say this morning on Get Up, but it was a smart point to make. Players are going to be a little hesitant for a shift in the calendar because right now many of them get time off in the summer when they have the opportunity to be with their families and kids are on summer vacation. It's kind of a perfect world. They may hesitate to want change, but this change is going to last at least one season, maybe more. There are a couple of benefits. One, for the NBA, they get the opportunity for us to have more information in a COVID-19 world. Two, they get the opportunity to see how other sports are handling it, how other arenas have handled it. So there are advantages across the board. But for us as sports fans, I think there's a massive advantage to a shift in the NBA calendar that starts it around Christmas Day and gets it all the way through the summer. I mean, what did Woj say? They're comfortable taking on Major League Baseball. Well, yeah, of course they are, because in a world today where we're having conversations on the negative for Major League Baseball, we're having conversations on the positive for the NBA. In a world where some of us feel like one sport has abandoned us, we feel like on the other side you've got a sport that's saying, hey, let's get it figured out so that we can get games played. Whether it's altruistic or whether it's business, it doesn't matter. The end effect to us as consumers is one is giving us a product and one isn't. All right. So when you start to think about that and then you get the product and the coverage that comes with it, I mean, how much are we going to talk about the NBA day in and day out during the summer? You know it. You listen to summer sports talk radio. We spend as much time at laughing about best sports movies because there just aren't as many sports to talk about in July. Well, there will be if we have meaningful NBA games being played. That's a huge opportunity. So if you're the NBA, you can either waste the beginning of your regular season going up against the NFL and getting your butt kicked and hope that you just get the most eyeballs possible in the summer. That's been their method. Or you can switch things around. You can give yourselves an opportunity to start at Christmas, avoid much of the NFL, all right? Start your regular season during the playoffs, but then you get that ramped up momentum of February. You get the ramped up basketball interest that comes anyway with March Madness. And then suddenly everybody's NBA starved for the entirety of the spring and the summer. Now all of a sudden you go into the playoffs in the first month of the NFL with tremendous momentum. I can't tell you that the NBA won't be able to grab good ratings out of that. And if they can grab good ratings out of that, if they can make that happen, it's a massive win. It's a massive win for the NBA, yes. But it's also a massive win for every one of you because all summer now, instead of having to sit around and say, what are we watching and why do we care? You'll know exactly what to watch. The NBA has a huge opportunity and I think hidden in the fact that they're coming out. The fact that they're coming back, hidden in that, is another massive win for the sport. It's not just a short-term win to come back. this plan and the adjustment it forces to the calendar could actually be a long-term win for the NBA. More First Take, Your Take coming up. Coming up, one of the most outspoken voices during this time, somebody that has truly changed my life and perspective in the last week. He's going to join us next. We'll talk to him.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. We'll get back to some conversation about the expansion of the NBA plan. I should say no expansion, the playoff plan for the NBA. We'll get back to that conversation in just a little bit. As the NBA has released their plan, the Board of Governors will vote on it tomorrow. We'll keep reacting to it. We'll take your thoughts on it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get to any of that, though, I wanted to have another opportunity. And if you listened to the show yesterday, I sat down with different people that I love and respect and I know mutually respect me and had real open, raw conversations about what's going on, not just right now in the country, but also what I should and could be doing. I will say loudly that a lot of this was born out of a social media post I saw from Emmanuel Acho. And Acho is somebody I've gotten to know covering college football. He's somebody that I respect the hell out of. He's also somebody that spoke honestly and clearly on social media in a beautiful way that I could never replicate, charging and really asking his white brothers and sisters and people that he knows and loves and works with in that capacity to speak out. It hit me. And that message, I can honestly say, over the course of the last week has genuinely changed my life. So I wanted the opportunity to talk to Acho on air about these tough conversations, because first and foremost, your message, Acho, thanks for the time, man. Your message was beautiful. Second, what really was the impetus? Like, why take, where did the inspiration come to post that moment?
Fitz, my guy, thank you for having me. Phenomenal question. I realized, Fitz, that somebody has to, right now, America is probably in the greatest turmoil domestically that I've seen in my lifetime. And it's racial. It is purely racial. Black people are angry. They are upset, both at police brutality. But if I can be frank, to a degree, they're upset at the oppressor. And the oppressor also can be synonymous with a white person. And so, Fitz, I grew up in an all-white high school, private school in Dallas, Texas, called St. Mark's. It's adjacent to Highland Park, where Matthew Stafford, Detroit Lions quarterback, went to high school. And I realized, Fitz, that I know how to communicate with so many of these white people, because these are who I grew up with, man. And while so many of my black brothers and sisters are so hurt and pained and angry that they're are not yet ready to relay the message, I said, you know what? Let me use this opportunity to stand in the gap now that my white brothers and sisters are ready to listen. Now, let me elaborate on that real quick, Fitz. I'm first-generation American. And so while I'm clothed in a 6'2", 240-pound black frame, I don't have the same pain as so many of my dear black brothers and sisters due to years upon years upon years of slavery and oppression. And so that pain, which, mind you, is very valid, because I don't have the same depths of that pain, I was able to lay aside some of my hurt and my frustration in order to communicate a message which I'm hoping can change the world.
Well, and I mean, the reason I wanted to bring you on is because we can be honest with each other, right? And
yes, sir.
That's where I think for me, I spent so many years of my life saying, well, and this phrase is one that triggers people right now, and I understand why more, so hear me out. But I spent years of my life saying I don't see color, because I don't care where you're from or who you are. I care if you're good. You know, that's all I've cared about. I think what really hit me in the process is the conversation is by not seeing color. What I'm actually not seeing is the struggles that people have to live through because of the color that they are. And so there's like this correction happening in my life where I'm trying to figure out, you know, I don't see color seems like such an easy, like, blanket statement to make that is based in good for many people, but I'm now learning is incredibly hurtful in and of itself.
Yeah, Fitz, I don't see color. It's funny. So many of my white friends, I don't blame them because a lot of them are racially ignorant. What I mean by that is statements like, I don't see color. Well, all lives matter. And we're not asking you to not see color, right? You should see each and every color, black, brown, white, it does not matter. And you should see that color and appreciate the beauty that that color brings to the spectrum. And in the same sense of like, well, all lives matter. How do you say black lives matter? Man, sports fans are listening to this show, so they understand. Every October in the NFL while I was playing, it was Breast Cancer Awareness Month. That's not to say other forms of cancer do not matter. We're just heightening the awareness of one particular cancer on this one particular month. In the same mantra, Fitz, if you were going to walk into a neighborhood and you saw one house was on fire, you wouldn't call the fire department and say, all these houses are on fire. No, you're going to target the one specific house that's burning. And so black people aren't asking you to not see color. We're not asking so many dear white friends to not see color. All we're saying is see our color and don't discriminate based upon our color.
It's such a simple message, Acho, and it's, you know, it's almost funny to me. So that it's lost and it's been lost. And so I'll ask you a very direct and difficult question. When you see things like yesterday on social media, it was Blackout Tuesday. So today you see social media, you see Whiteout Wednesday suddenly trends. When you see those messages, I mean, what's the effect of that to you?
It's a very simple answer. Awareness. You know, I don't think that a Blackout Tuesday in and of itself is going to change the world. But if it's executed properly, it'll raise awareness. People will now be like, you know what? Why are all these Blackout Tuesday posts? Oh, it's because of so many black deaths at the hands of police brutality. Wait, which ones? Let me go look that up. Oh, wow. Let me go look that up. So I don't necessarily if we stop and start with a gimmick, then we've done nothing positive. If we start and stop with the hashtag, then we've made no true progress. But how can a hashtag lead to education, which can lead to conversation, which can lead to a lack of discrimination? And that's what I wanted to do with my video, Fitz, is like, how can I put something in the world that will make Fitz talk to his cousin or uncle or brother or sister? The goal isn't a hashtag. The goal is to truly make change and not just put a Band-Aid on it, because that's what a law does, right? So many people are like, we got to change these laws and these legislations. No. A law is only in place once a problem has existed. You only sign a contract in the event things go bad. So my goal, Fitz, is to fix the root of the problem, not just try to put a Band-Aid whenever a problem occurs.
Which I love. We're talking to ESPN college football analyst Emmanuel Acho on First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. Acho, you know, it's a little stunning to me because sometimes it's cyclical, right? So you've got the black community that feels afraid of the police, and you have the police, which seems like it's very charged up against the black community. So I'm looking at this cycle, trying to figure out, to your point, the why, the how we stop it. How do we get to a point where the police community doesn't feel like it has to be on edge because they're dealing with the black community? Where's the disconnect?
Man, the disconnect right now is there's a complete lack of trust. You know, it's kind of like an old Western standoff. And it's a matter of, okay, I don't trust you, you don't trust me. So now both sides are approaching the situation just with nervousness. And you know, bro, if you're nervous about anything, you're going to make a wrong move. So how do we fix the disconnect? I will say this, and I will say this very clearly. There has to be exposure. Allow me to explain this. I grew up first generation American. My parents are from Nigeria. I didn't grow up with any dogs. when I was a kid, I got attacked by a dog. And as a result, 20 years later, as a 30-year-old man, I, to this day, will walk through a park, and I can't decipher between a dog that's a threat and a dog that's just a cute, furry little pet. In the same manner, I think that white people, you don't grow up around black people. So you see a black man, and you can't decipher between a black man that's a threat and a black man that's just a black man. Black people, we don't grow up around white people, so we can't decipher between a white person who's a racist and a white person that's just white. And so the only way we can solve our problem in America, Fitz, is through exposure at an elementary level, and that'll just filter itself out.
In some ways, like, I know this seems like a strange analogy, but go with me, Acho. Like, you know, I'm a Raiders fan. Everybody knows I'm a Raiders fan. When you walk into the room and people find out you're a Raiders fan, they make a bunch of presumptions based on the other interactions they've had with Raiders fans. Now, that doesn't typically hold true to me. I am not the same as many of those. But at some point, you're judged by, let's say, the lowest common denominator of whatever your fandom is, right? Like, whatever the worst of the fans for a team represents everybody, whether you want to or not, you have to sort of break through that. It feels like that happens in the world where it's like the worst of everybody is what everybody's judging people by. And I don't know how to get, like, other than widening your perspective and getting around more people and finding a broader base of people to be around, I don't know how to stop that.
That, my friend, that's the true issue. The true issue is exactly what you just said, is like, the only way to stop it, Fitz, if I'm being honest, is to essentially mandate integration and not tolerate integration. You know, in the 1960s, we were like, okay, integration is now, it's illegal to have segregation. And then in the private school system, the federal government in 1976, they mandated it. The beauty of sports, to your point, Fitz, is that sports allows, it essentially mandates it in and of itself. If you're on a basketball team, that team's going to have black and white people. You're on a football team, it's going to have black and white people. And so we have to find a way as a society to mandate that we're exposed, because otherwise, like you said, it's just going to come down to sports. But then sports is here for a moment and gone for the next. So yes, sports unify, but they unify for 60 minutes or for 3 hours of a game. Then after that, everybody goes on their way.
But the crazy part is people are willing to be diverse and unified. And I keep saying this, when your favorite team scores a touchdown, you're in a bar. You don't care what the guy looks like next to you. You don't care where he's from. If he's wearing your favorite team shirt, you are high-fiving, hugging, buying drinks. Like, I don't understand why we can have that incredible unification in this sense. And then when it comes to actual human treatment of other people, we can't come in with the same benefit of the doubt we give somebody just for wearing the same damn shirt that we wear.
Man, but I think that's because, bro, when you're high-fiving them in a bar, that's superficial. Y'all are both cheering for the same thing. But when you have to coexist in life, now y'all are no longer necessarily on the same quote-unquote side. Because now you regress back to, man, well, at the end of the day, I'm black. And at the end of the day, I'm white. As opposed to, at the end of the day, we're human fighting this life together. And so that, to your point, that's where we have to get to. I just don't think that we are there yet, because we still have so many barriers to rip off.
The funny thing is, and for I'll say this again because a lot of people listening don't know my story at all, but for someone, for me, that's 43 and white, I came from a very rough home. I came from a bad home environment. I came from poverty at some level. My brother was in prison for many years. I came from all of these things that might in other ways skew the way I see it. But I also came from a very integrated background. What I've learned from Emmanuel Acho in the last week is that I have taken that integrated background for granted as just the way most people see the world. And I'm trying to use whatever I can in front of a microphone to at least implore anybody that came from any background to look around and say, if my background was integrated, how can I get more people to live that way? And if it wasn't, how can I solve it? Acho, in the last week, you have made me a better human being. I really appreciate that. First and foremost, appreciate your friendship. And I also appreciate your honesty and willingness to come on and have these weird conversations. Genuinely, man, I love you. I appreciate it.
This is always love, brother. Love, man. We'll talk soon.
Acho, with the real talk. And I wanted him to come on because it charged change in me. And I know you guys want to stick to sports, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to get right back to it. But it's important to me to continue to charge for change, be better, demand better, not just from the government, not just from the police, not just from communities. Demand better from the people that are in the web of people that you deal with every single day. Demand more. Demand real conversations. Be willing to feel stupid. Be willing to feel awkward. At the very least, that's what I've tried to do in front of this microphone for the last 48 hours, and I won't stop. We'll continue breaking down the NBA action. James Dolan has tried to backtrack on his original comments. That caused a real reaction from Max and Stephen A. You'll hear about it next. First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Just want to say thanks. You guys have been awesome. And look, it hasn't been a universal response. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, we've had our fair share of calls over the last 24 to 48 hours that have told me to stick to sports. I've had my fair share of angry tweeters that have said the same. But for every, 10 of those, there have been one or two that have come in and said, hey, you've made me think, and I will take that all day long. I appreciate you guys being willing to listen through what we're trying to do, which is use sports as a bigger platform to try and at least educate people on some of what we're trying to figure out in the world today. In the meantime, the Knicks have made a statement, and James Dolan has made his own statement on top of it, and none of it seems to really qualify as right to so many people that have read it. Now, everybody can interpret it differently, but Max today certainly had issue with the way that James Dolan and the Knicks, in fact, have handled their statements.
This was not a complicated issue. Number one, when you said we're no more qualified, that is not the point. That's a straw man. No more qualified. Are you claiming, since everyone else commented that you're less qualified? Are you the least qualified? The answer may be yes. You may be the least qualified. And maybe that's why you didn't release a statement and apparently muzzled MSG. The least qualified? This is a complicated issue. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Even if you don't want to get into broader societal issues, George Floyd, an African-American man, had a white police officer's knee on his neck. The whole world saw it. There are protests not only in this country, but around the world based on that video. It's unambiguous. He was pleading for his life and had it snuffed out, and we all saw it. That's complicated. You don't need to offer prescriptions. Many others did not offer prescriptions. The bare minimum is to address that directly. And if you can't figure that out and then make these sniveling excuses the next day, you have no place in the NBA, in my opinion. And let me tell you something, what you're going to do. I understand. Children who inherit billions of dollars from their mommies and daddies don't like to be told what to do because they haven't been very powerful because they can exert financial influence. You will listen to me carefully. You will come out and make a statement addressing George Floyd. That's what you will do. Get it through your head because that's what you're going to do.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. These are difficult times because what we're starting to see is, as I've talked to a couple of people over the course of the last few hours, fans that care more about how their owners feel about these issues, and players, especially in the NBA, that care more than ever before. Players understand they have choices in where they do business and how they run their business and where, as entrepreneurs, they decide they want to play. It's become part of the empowerment of the NBA. For the New York Knicks, they're going to have to make sure that whatever they say, they're willing to stand behind, because it will have consequence, not just to their fans, of course, but also to the players that may or may not decide they want to be a part of a franchise, depending on how they align on some of these moral issues that matter so much right now to the fabric of America. Coming up next, the Will Cain Show. He's going to continue his reaction to the breaking news of the NBA's plan to return. Thanks for hanging out with us. First Take Your Take.